Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is artist, author, illustrator, Kate Samworth. We're going to be talking about a number of things, including her award-winning book, Aviary Wonders Incorporated, the Spring Catalog and Instruction Manual. Kate, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. You too.
I hate to confess this, but I first came across your illustrations in Why Fish Don't Exist by Lulu Miller, and I immediately asked her on the interview, who did the illustrations, because they were really good. And then she told me about Aviary Wonders Incorporated, which won awards, and I want to start out by talking about that. This book, Kate, is wild because it's a colorful, bright, very innovative book, but I also found it weirdly dark and bizarre. But to me, those are positive values. Those are positive values. So would you admit that it's dark and bizarre?
Yes, definitely.
Good.
And
good.
In fact, I kind of regret putting out such a dark vision.
Well, let's talk about what the book is. It's essentially an instruction manual of putting together these sort of, all I could say is, simulacrums of birds, screwing different parts together, what works, what doesn't work, all the different pieces you can get. And the idea is really funny and weird, but it really is dark too, because it's like about extinction of real birds. It's like, now we're going to replace wildlife with, like, you know, Westworld wildlife. It's talk to me about how you came up with that idea.
Well, I had just moved away from New Orleans. My husband and I left New Orleans in 2004 and moved to Philadelphia to be back up north near my family. And Hurricane Katrina hit.
Oh, God.
And we, in fact, were in Costa Rica bird watching, and we're walking by this cafe and heard New Orleans on the news, and we thought, oh, there must be some music event, or it must be one of those happy travel stories. And then the next day we saw the newspaper and found out about the hurricane. So I was devastated, and it was really hard to get a hold of my friends for that first week because all the phone lines were jammed, and I was really sad about all the destruction of the city and everything. And so I was sitting in my studio listening to NPR all day long, which is not that healthy.
No.
And I didn't know how to address the human aspects because I wasn't there, and I had like a sense of survivor's guilt, and it felt too enormous to touch the human aspects of Hurricane Katrina. But I was thinking about all the nights that I spent at Audubon Park watching the snowy egrets and the heron and the ibis. And I heard an interview with this couple on the radio talking about how quiet the city was. And they stayed throughout the storm. And they said they knew the people would come back, but the weirdest thing was waking up to no birds because the winds had blown all the birds out, or the birds felt the wind and left. And so for the first few days, it was really still in that eerie way. And so I was thinking about how much of the environmental damage we're causing that could be avoided, and how we just are kind of putting our faith in some scientific solution so that we can keep consuming at our current rate. So I came up with the idea for a catalog, and it was like a tongue-in-cheek response. And then over time, I tried to develop it into a science fiction story or a novella or a play or a fake journal. And eventually, I decided the catalog was the most effective way to tell my story.
The amazing thing is, now that I've heard the backstory, it makes perfect sense. That's really funny. Did you gear it towards young people? It's actually it's an adult book.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in the sense, people who are listening, that it has overt, you know, any kind of weirdnesses. It looks like a young people's book or a catalog, but it really is for adults.
Definitely. When I was working on it, I was studying printmaking at the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Art. And so I had really planned on just making a series of lithographs and turning them into handbound books and just making maybe 10 copies. And then I took an illustration course and showed it to my instructor, and he encouraged me to try to get it published. And that meant I had to make a couple of concessions to make it a little more kid-friendly. Because so it used to be that you would jam the bird's leg, you would just jam the hip, the leg bone back into the hip socket.
Yeah.
And so they said, well, you need to find a slightly less gruesome way to attach the leg. So screwing it in was surreal enough that kids could handle that.
What's amazing is when you look at your body of work, you really have a very deep and serious connection with the natural world.
This is true.
Talk to me about how that evolved in your life.
My dad worked for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
Yikes!
Well, okay, in his defense, in the 70s, that seemed like a good answer.
Oh, you're right. I could see that. Okay.
Yeah. And so he had to answer to the EPA, and so he was very aware of environmental issues and energy conservation. He was a big Carter fan, and he really pounded us to conserve energy and resources. And,
wow, what a great father.
Yes, truly. So he really gave me the sense of responsibility towards the environment. And then my mom was a bird watcher, a bird lover, loved being outdoors.
Nice.
And they used to take us to the Chesapeake Bay. They bought
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time there as kids. Although, to be honest, it was so hot and it stunk of dead horseshoe crab. And there were a lot of biting flies. So my memories of it are that it was really hot and sometimes unpleasant. But now I really, really love it.
And you've also you've traveled around the world, and so you actually have a global sense of the environment and of also the zoology. But you've done some interesting things. You volunteered on organic farms in Spain and Turkey.
That's right.
And then you teach annual workshops in Spain?
I was until the pandemic. We'll see when I can resume that. But this would have been my second year teaching painting in Spain. It's a country I've been to many times that I'm crazy about.
I've birdwatched Spain.
Oh!
I should preface that. I only birdwatched Catalonia.
Oh, beautiful.
I know, because they came out with the Catalan people at Lynx Publications came out with a guide to birdwatching Catalonia. It was wonderful.
Yes.
And we went there. And Spain blew my socks off. I didn't expect it.
Yes, it's an incredible place with so many different cultures, such history, so much to discover. Each region is so different. It's a fascinating place.
Now, when I looked you up on Wiki pages, which you can never tell whether stuff is right on that, it says that you have new projects, a series about a revolution led by bears. Now, you have a whole series of works already with bears in them, and a fictionalized story about Charles Peel. And you do have a bunch of works about Charles Peel. Are these still projects ongoing?
Yes, they are. Peel became an obsession.
Well, first, let's talk about who he was, because I guarantee you most people have never heard of him.
Okay, they are in for a treat. He was an American portrait painter, he was raised outside of Annapolis on Kent Island. And then moved to Philadelphia, where he could find more work as a portrait painter. And this was in the late 1700s. And he became really interested in nature and conserving the environment. And he got the idea that he could collect and catalog one of every living species in the country, which it then was brand new. You know, he was there during the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and there was still so much to be discovered beyond the Mississippi, so he didn't know what he was getting into. So he started a natural history museum.
Wow.
And he opened the first natural history museum that was open to the public. He was trying to bring nature to the city. He really thought that he could save nature by bringing it to the people and helping them appreciate all the living things through taxidermy.
There's some classic images of Peel that you use in your own work.
Yes.
And this, like, sort of drawing back a curtain on this, like, sort of huge, you know, dramatic, crazy cabinet of curiosities that he has.
Yes.
And you're passionate about cabinets of curiosities.
Definitely. And I think a lot of us are because it, that period, especially like 18th, early 19th century, we still had this idea that nature was endless and that, you know, for example, Audubon, although he was working in the mid-1800s, thought he could just shoot dozens of birds and to paint them. And, you know, people were hunting all these specimen without realizing that there were actually a finite number if we were to destroy their habitats and so on. So I like the sense that they had that there was this endless supply of habitat and trees and animals, and the fact that Peel was alive during this crossroads, like the founding of America. If he'd been successful in his mission, maybe he could have preserved more habitat.
But he really inspired a whole generation of naturalists who either saw the museum or knew him.
Yes, definitely. And he was contemporary with Benjamin Franklin.
Wow.
And with a lot of the French illustrators and collectors.
Wow.
And Jefferson, he and Jefferson were in correspondence about agriculture and developing farming tools. He's a fascinating person.
And I love the fact that you're fascinated by these cabinets of curiosities, which were very big in Europe before the Europeans came to America. They were called Wunderkameras, and they just collected sort of odd stuff, crazy stuff that people would want to gawk at. There was just like a whole odd, nonsensical collection of like gawking stuff.
Yes. It's a lot of fun to think that people were so interested in looking closely at fossils and bones. And
they would often put them together in these weird juxtapositions. Like they would have preserved fetuses with coral and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. Weird stuff.
Right. Yeah, turning them into art projects almost.
Now, when did you start doing art yourself, though, that you knew that you were an artist? I ask that of all artists. This is not just you. I'm always interested in that point of when you realize, crap, I'm an artist.
Well, my mother's an artist, and so she would give us little art projects after school all the time. So she definitely is the one that got me interested. And then I remember in high school, well, when I was growing up, I always wanted to do dioramas for the book reports.
Oh.
So I remember just getting really absorbed in creating those dioramas. And then in high school, it was the thing that I wanted to do. The time flew when I was making art, and I just found a lot of joy and escape in it. So,
but did you ever go to school in art, or are you basically...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I went briefly. I went to regular college when I graduated high school for a semester because my dad wanted me to have a regular job with health insurance. But after a semester, I realized I really couldn't hack it, and I dropped out. And then I went to the Corcoran briefly, and they weren't really teaching us anything. They were just leaving us up to our own devices.
Oh, wow.
And so then I was playing in the band, and then we had the chance to go to Europe. So I quit art school to go tour with the band. And then I ended up in New Orleans and found exactly the type of artistic training I was looking for.
Now, what was your early work like? Was it like your work now, which is very detailed and almost surrealist in content and with an amazing sense of humor? And your work is like nobody else's work I've seen. It's very, very beautiful, but it has a lot of meaning to it, too. And a lot of fun. I want to mention that your work, not all your work, but an awful lot of your work is fun. When I think of, there's a piece you did. Well, there's several pieces you did. Raccoons with a Plan. And there's these raccoons riding on bears. You also have raccoons discovering Sun Ra, which I love that work.
I
love that work.
Thanks.
And then there's Bears organizing. It's like, I hope this is all going to be part of the Bears revolution, because yes. It's really, really wild. It's really, really strange stuff.
Oh, thanks. It's an escape. It's really an escape. I like to imagine that the natural world is going to triumph somehow.
And they're planning it behind our backs.
Exactly. They're finding our tools. They're finding our half-finished project, our abandoned shopping malls. And they're like, hey, I got an idea.
But they're also developing a great sense of music because they're listening to Sun Ra.
Yes. I was trying to imagine what kind of music raccoons would like, and I think they would go for some really experimental, wild stuff.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is artist, author, illustrator, Kate Samworth. We were talking about many things, including her award-winning book. You should really see this. Aviary Wonders, Inc. Spring Catalog and Instruction Manual, I think, is a great introduction to Kate's work. But please go to her website. Do you want to give your website out?
Sure. It's katesamworth.com.
Because you can see all the other works that we're talking about. You also do an interesting series about Frida Kahlo. Why Frida Kahlo?
Well, it's funny. I've always loved her work, but when I was trying to turn my Charles Peel story into an illustrated novel, he really needed a foil. So I wanted someone with a sense of adventure, a sense of humor, a little bit saucy, because he was a very serious, buttoned-up man. And she shared his love of nature, even though they were alive at different times. But I thought if they could meet in the world of paintings come to life, that she could bring him a sense of humor, and he could teach her more about nature.
It's and they're really interesting paintings. They're really, really. Is there a series? Like, how many are in this series?
Oh gosh.
Okay, that actually answers my question. As soon as you said "oh gosh," then we can sort of assume that there's a lot. You also you've also done works about other works of art too, like Max Ernst's Elephant of the Sleeves. You have Frida wrangling Max's elephant.
Yes. One version of the story is that Charles Peel steps out of his self-portrait and he enters this museum where all the paintings have come to life. And so he meets Frida and the Meninas from Velázquez's painting in the halls of the museum, and they go to find new specimens for his natural history museum so they can enter any painting and try to capture the animals. So they go to Bosch's garden, too.
Now, are these going to be released in book form, or are they going to be an exhibition?
Oh, they've been exhibited over the years, and I've written and rewritten the book a million times. It might be the thing I worked on until I'm 106.
No. Don't wait that long. No, Kate. Don't do that.
Okay.
Don't be one of those people. I'm going to work on this really cool thing until I die, and then I have no idea what will come out of it. In the meantime, the rest of us will be dead, and we'll never see it.
Well, thanks for the impetus to try to get back to work on it.
Because I see all these works on your website, like Peel in India, Seeking Specimens in the Land of Ramayana, and I go, oh, my God, I got to see this all put together.
Yeah, it can feel endless. So
well, stop it.
Okay. Like,
just stop it, Kate, and put it together and put it out. Because yeah, I'm after looking at Aviary Wonders, I'm really fascinated. But these other stories seem so much more complex and so much more interesting.
Yes, unfortunately, advice I've been getting from different agents and publishers is that it's just too much. And I'm waiting for them to realize that adults want illustrated books, too. There are a few out there. Sean Tan is an incredible illustrator who illustrates for adults. So I'm really hoping that that I'll be able to get some adult illustration books published in the next, I don't know, few years.
Now let's talk about media. What do you like to work in most?
Oils are my favorite, but they're not the most practical for illustration.
Right.
Because they dry so slowly, and because once they're photographed and reproduced, they don't need to be in oil. So acrylic is more practical for illustration. I've been experimenting with watercolor lately, and I really love pencil drawings.
I can see that because the black and white drawings are on your website. You get a lot of detail into those.
Oh, I really do like scratchboard. I studied printmaking and etching, and the scratchboard has that same feeling of an etching because you can get those detailed lines.
What size do you like to work at?
Small. The largest I work is about 22 by 30, but that's pretty rare. I really like working 8 by 10 or so.
Now, you also have been doing digital prints of your work.
Yes, I don't do anything on the computer. Those are just mixed media, watercolor and pencil, and then I have them photographed and then have a professional printer make prints, but I don't know how to use Photoshop or anything.
You just do it. Now, we're going to run out of time, and before we do, I have to talk to you about one of your other earlier projects. Was you were in a band in the sort of late 1980s.
That's right.
And I just want to, the only reason your artwork is obviously of premier importance right now, but I just want to pay attention to this band because this band was damned fine. It was called Fire Party. Talk to me about how that band got together.
Oh, gosh. That was a fluke. I was friends with Natalie, the guitarist, in high school. And we had been playing together just for fun because we were really into going to see bands, Minor Threat, Rites of Spring, Government Issue.
There Minor Threat and Government Issue are like music to my ears. I still have the my original Minor Threat vinyl and all that stuff.
Well, we got to see them when we were in high school. You know, they played all the time at the rec centers and parks and everything. And they were all ages shows, so we were allowed to go. So we got really interested in playing music, like, not that we could be that good, but in that sort of carefree vein, shall we say. And then we bumped into this woman that had been really involved with the music scene, who I used to sing in the choir with when I was in the seventh grade. And we've met her at a show. And so we started playing together, and then we found our drummer, Nikki, who's still playing music. She's a great drummer. And we just did it for kicks, and then we ended up getting a show, and then Ian asked us if we wanted to record an album, and then we got invited to go on tour with Scream, so it just kind of snowballed.
It was like one of those things, before you knew it, you're not just in a band, but you were in a band that people liked.
Yeah, well, that's nice. Thank you.
Well, you had two EPs on Discord.
That's right.
And I just want to recommend them. They're really, really good. There's songs like Jerk. I love that stuff. When did the band break up, as they always inevitably do?
Yes, I think it was 1989. I'm pretty sure it was 1989. It might have been 1990. My memory is a bit hazy. That was a while ago.
Was it a mutual breakup, or did somebody
just kind of fizzled? You know, it's hard to. I never considered myself a serious musician. And it was fun, but I never intended to be in a band. So after a while, I got tired of practicing the same songs. And I had always found art more satisfying.
Were you doing art all the while you were in the band?
Yes.
So that must have been frustrating.
I mean, it wasn't that big a deal. I was just, you know, a teenager, early 20s, making art in my bedroom. It wasn't a big deal, but just I got a little bit bored of. I mean, it's as fun as it is to tour, it's also tedious to sit in a car for hours and hours a day. And
were you the artsy one in the band?
I don't know. They're all really creative.
Yeah,
she's really.
That's good to hear.
Creative. She's a cook, and she's about to go to a writing program. Amy still sings, and she's a rock climber. Natalie still plays music, and. Oh.
What about a reunion? It's like, no.
But I wouldn't want to do something that I did in my early 20s or teenage years, you know? I just don't feel like the same person.
What are you, David Byrne? I want to, before we only have a few minutes left, I want to talk about the illustrations for Why Fish Don't Exist. I always considered that's going to be an interesting project to work with an author to get the sort of the essence of what the author is doing into your work. Was it hard to do that?
It was so fantastic. Lulu is such an incredible person, and I already admired her work before I met her because I knew her from Radiolab. And then I met her, and she's so fun and interested in everybody and everything, and I was just in awe of her. So it was really an honor to get to work on that book. I really couldn't believe that she talked the publisher into hiring me. And so she helped me. There were certain chapters that seemed really straightforward to me, illustration-wise, that I just couldn't figure out how to add that sense of mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really good to be able to pick her brains and think of other ways to approach. A few of the chapters were harder than the
Well, that's what my next question was going to be, because I've interviewed Lulu just a couple of weeks ago, and I love the book. But a couple of the chapters are very cerebral and not lending itself obviously to visual medium. How did you deal with that? Because obviously some chapters were easier than others.
I guess there was one chapter at the end. I left it to last because it was the hardest of Jordan in the boat.
Yep.
Trying to capture the fish.
Yeah,
and she had suggested having, like, I just remember this conversation about she wanted the fish to be pulling on the line. And then in the way that she had proposed it, the book would have had to be in a horizontal format. So I just remember details like that where one person has the idea, but then the artist, when they go to set it up, realizes that the composition is going to make that idea impossible. So that was the hardest.
So this was chapter. A real collaboration in the truest sense of the word.
Yeah, it really was. Normally the publishers don't want the illustrator and author communicating.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but in this case, since we're already friends, they really couldn't stop us.
That's very cool.
That was great.
We're out of time. My guest tonight is artist, author, illustrator, Kate Samworth. I strongly advise you to go to her website, which is?
KateSamworth.com.
That's SamWorth. Look at all the work we've been talking about, and you'll understand what we're talking about. We've been talking about her award-winning book, too, Aviary Wonders Incorporated, The Spring Catalog, an Instruction Manual. Kate, it's been a real pleasure.
Same here. Thank you so much.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good morning.